Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the Internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to Born in the 1940s. We remember. And I'll tell you what, in the days that we live in today, remembering what America used to be like, what our rights used to be like, is very, very dangerous business for sure. So I'm here with my co-host, Professor Jim Fetzer, who's indefatigable in trying to get the news out in our golden years. I haven't seen any gold yet, Jim, but we all surely do stay busy. Good morning.
Good morning. Just to give an illustration of things we didn't have to endure when we were growing up, these advertisements for erectile dysfunction have become ubiquitous, Maria. I mean, it's embarrassing. You know, we have kids. I have a grandson who's about to turn nine and a granddaughter. I mean, these things are on the television all the time. When I was growing up, the male erection was like the greatest secret of for a young person's life until you figured out what was going on.
Well, yeah, I totally agree. But, you know, you got to look at, we lived in healthier times. We had healthy food. We had clean air. We actually had clean water that didn't come out purple from the faucet. And men were much more virile without all the vaccines, genetically modified food, pharmaceutical drugs. You know, I mean, there are people, you know, I have a friend who works at a testosterone clinic, of all things, in Scottsdale. And she said that, you know, men as young as their mid-30s come in because they're already having sexual dysfunction.
That's just ridiculous, Maria. No young man in age of 30 should have any problems of that kind. I mean, it's ridiculous. And of course, the vaccines now we're discovering are inducing all kinds of problems. A CDC whistleblower admitted that they cause autism. This outbreak down in Brazil seems to have been caused by a Monsanto product that was being used to spray to kill these mosquitoes, where they had the mosquitoes before and after the spraying, but the outbreak seems to be centered in the same locale because this spray brings about genetic mutations in the mosquitoes. And if you study the pattern of these births with small brains and so forth, they're all centered on exactly the area where the Monsanto product has been produced. And now we're learning that a whole host of health doctors who figured out that some of these vaccines include some ingredient called nigelase that inhibits the body's production of vitamin D, which would ordinarily kill cancers before they develop, is being deliberately inhibited so that we will have more cancer, so companies can make more money on anti-cancer therapies, medical procedures, and the like. I mean, this is as disgusting as it gets.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you, I put up yesterday on social media two videos of infants getting, one infant was getting seven shots at one time. I don't know how many the other one was getting. Most people couldn't even watch the video. The way the nurse locks that kid's legs down and the kid is tortured, it looks like a torture video out of Gitmo. And most people can't stand to see it. So I think that putting the videos of what they're doing to these perfect new babies, new little souls with healthy immune systems and just torturing them. You know, I try to remember, you know, when we were kids, the only thing I remember, you know, you had to get a smallpox shot, you know, to go to school. We all have the big scar on our arm from the smallpox shot. Then they came out with the polio shot. But even when my kids were little, you know, maybe it was a course of six or seven shots all the way through school. That was it. But they're giving these babies 26 shots in the first 2 years of their lives. My contention is they're sterilizing all of us.
Well, there's one story about a baby that got 17 injections in one day and died shortly thereafter. I mean, these babies don't have a developed immunity system, and, you know, it's not allowed to develop. That's one reason why parents who try to raise their children in a septic environment are making a mistake. You got to be used to interacting with the what's normally present in the environment to develop your immune system. So the whole thing is shocking. They're overwhelming these babies and doing immense damage, including brain damage. And I think the anti-vaccine movement is very, very well founded, which leads me to be absolutely stunned when a state like California, governed by no less a figure than Jerry Brown, passes a mandatory vaccine program. It's obscene. It's intended to benefit the manufacturers who produce these vaccines. It has no discernible health benefits that I can tell.
Well, I have to agree. And, you know, Australia now is ready to cut off people who are on the dole if they don't vaccine their children. So now you have mandatory vaccines happening to the poor. You know, sooner or later, Jim, you know they're going to have vaccines they're going to try to force seniors in this country to take, because that's a great way to get rid of us, especially the flu vaccine.
Well, yeah, I mean, what's the disease outbreak for which the vaccines are supposed to be the cure? I mean, this is providing a solution to a non-existent problem.
Well, you know, they create the problem, the reaction, and the solution. That's the old Hegelian dialect. And people fall for it all the time. I thought it was quite amazing that as soon as the Zika virus came out, they said they were days away from having a vaccine.
Days away. Isn't that remarkable? They could only be days away if they'd anticipated it in advance.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, the solution I was reading for the Zika virus, now that they're blaming Monsanto, is to release more genetically engineered mosquitoes. And, you know,
oh,
Brazil was
great.
Where they released, you know, tens of thousands of them about, you know, a year ago. So I'm not doubting that that contributed to what's happening there as well. Imagine a genetically engineered mosquito eating Monsanto and stinging somebody.
Well, that's it. I mean, these genetically modified organisms, like the genetically modified corn, can overwhelm, just as a matter of competition, the natural species which don't have the insecticide gene added to it. And thereby can, you know, take over plots of farms where they were raising their own corn, but they wind up discovering that it's Monsanto corn for which they have to pay a royalty. This has happened in Mexico, which had some 236 varieties of corn, and now Monsanto has just been taking it all over.
I know. I mean, I miss eating corn, but I haven't eaten it for so many years unless I can find it at a farmer's market grown by somebody who lives across the street.
So you know the origin.
Right.
And if the TPP passes, Maria, it will be illegal to identify the source or the origin of corn. You won't know if it's genetically modified or not, and yet they have fed genetically modified corn to rats and discovered they become sterile within 6 months.
Right. Well, you know, I did notice something when I went to my supermarket. I spend most of my money in the fruits and vegetable aisle because, you know, I'm a vegetarian. But here, you know, in this little town in Arizona, in a Safeway store, all the vegetables and fruits have identifying tags what country they're from. I saw vegetables from Chile yesterday, from Mexico. But at least they label it, you know, which made me laugh when I was coming across the border from Mexico back to Arizona. And the guy's like, do you have any produce that you're taking back into the country? Yeah, I wanted to laugh because all the produce here is from Mexico.
Chile or other countries. Yeah,
exactly.
That's incredible, isn't it?
I mean, you see how ridiculous it is. You know, I want to go back to what you opened with, the male dysfunction situation.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen, maybe you haven't, because I know you've been traveling. We'll talk about the latest event you spoke at. But there's a congresswoman, I'm trying to think what state, who's trying to get a bill through that in order for men to get Viagra or any of the male, you know, erection pills,
enhancements,
that they have to get their wife's permission. They got to get, you know, spend time with their doctor, learning all the side effects of the drug. Well, she said, you know, if they're going to, adjudicate a woman's rights to abortion or contraception in the name of we're worried about your health, she said, well, these drugs are very dangerous for men, and she wants to pass a bill where they have to go through similar bullshit that they're putting women through. She knows it has no chance.
Politically motivated. I get it. That's clever. I like it. As has been said, if men could become pregnant, abortion would be our most sacred right.
Absolutely. And, you know, it looks like every one of these candidates on the GOP party are ready to just crush women's rights. Crush, you know, you see Scott Walker, so many of these governors defunding Planned Parenthood based on those phony videos that have already been proven to be phony. The people that made them are the ones that were indicted. Right. And yet they're still, I don't understand. You know, people say to me, you know, well, if their goal is depopulation, what problem do they have with abortion?
Right, I agree.
Yeah, but
and in fact, I mean, all the anti-abortion arguments are ill-conceived. I mean, the most obvious point being that giving women no choice turns them into reproductive slaves, having to carry to term an unwanted fetus. We all know from sociological studies that unwanted children are the principal source of juvenile delinquency and adult criminals. So, you know, they're not only imposing on a woman and forcing her to become a reproductive slave, but they're burdening society with a host of additional problems. It's fantastically expensive to oppose abortion, but it's also so grossly undemocratic. I mean, isn't the United States supposed to be about choice? When you have choice, Maria, no woman is forced to carry a fetus to term or to have an abortion she doesn't want. You let everyone live in accordance with their own conscience and family circumstances. I just have no sympathy whatsoever for the so-called pro-life movement, which appears indeed to be anti-sex and anti-freedom. It's a disgrace. It's authoritarian and undemocratic.
Well, it is anti-sex, but it's okay for them to do whatever they want, you know, like passing these anti-sodomy laws. I mean, what kind of country are we? And I don't remember if it was you who said it last, but you said, you know, what do you expect from a country that was, you know, formed by Puritans? And I think that's why we have so much sexual dysfunction in this country. Do you know what I mean? Religion has to play a big part in how messed up people's sexuality is here.
That's right. I have a friend who was the head of the department when I was hired on the Duluth campus of the University of Minnesota, who was himself Jewish and who observed about the difference between Christianity and Judaism, that Judaism has lots of constraints about food, but none about sex. Christianity, none about food, but a lot about sex. I mean, it's bizarre.
I know, especially since their leader was supposedly sexless. You know what I mean?
Well,
what do you think about with the Zika virus? All of a sudden, and it happens to hit these extremely religious countries where women can't get abortions, can't get contraception. So now they're doomed, even if they have a deformed fetus inside them, they're doomed to carry it and give birth to it. And because of that, the Pope said in the Zika virus, he'll make an exception for contraception, but not for abortion. Who the hell is he? You know, Italians used to make a joke about the Pope making rules for them, and it doesn't translate the same into English, but what it comes out to is if you don't play the game, don't make the rules.
Yeah, it's very disturbing. The Pope he ought to have been supporting abortion, but that would be too great a transformation for the church, apparently, even though he's doing a lot to try to bring it into the 21st century. And here I do think that, you know, at least endorsing contraception is not sufficient, but it is a step in the right direction. And, of course, we can return to his intervention in our political campaign here where he attacked Donald Trump for wanting to build a wall To which the response is made, the Vatican is surrounded by walls. It looks like there's just a touch of hypocrisy there.
Exactly. I don't know if you've seen it, and it's a relatively new show. Actually, there's another show I want to talk to you about, Jim. You can't afford to miss it. But I was watching this new cartoon. It's on Hulu. It's called Border Town. And the premise of the show is the white border agent who lives next door to a Mexican landscaper. And this little cartoon shows more truth in both sides of the story, from the white people side and the minority side, than anything else. And it just happens last night's episode was about one more Mexican that gets born, which now makes the white people minorities. And the star becomes so in a panic that even though he hates making love with his wife, he figures, I better go make a new baby so we're not in the minority now. And the panic. And then they take it and they create a reservation for white people only, which they end up putting next to an Indian reservation. And you see the Indian guy crying because now he's got white people next door to him. The show is hilarious. It's so well done. The truth is there on both sides, and the ridiculousness is there. And it's called Border Town. So anybody listening, you know, if you haven't seen it, I mean, Family Guy's been my favorite for a long time, but Border Town is very. You think about it, and it, you know, it's pretty interesting. But they also started a new show. I think I talked to you about it before, but it's finally on. It's going to be 8 parts. James Franco is the star. And the name of the show, Jim, is 11-22-63.
Yeah, okay.
And this guy finds, he finds a way to go back in time to try to stop the assassination of Kennedy. They lined up, the first two shows I've seen have now lined up for when he goes back in right about the time Oswald is landing in Texas. So I'm looking at it, you know, with curiosity to see if it's actually might be factual. But it's also, you know, it's a good fantasy show too. So I said, oh, I'm sure if Jim just saw the opening photos, he'd be screaming at the TV because they're using all the photos that you have already proven were photoshopped of Lee Harvey Oswald.
Right. So they're going to say, could you have altered the assassination by affecting Lee Oswald? The answer, of course, is no. Oswald was actually standing in the doorway of the book depository when the motorcade went past. We have proven this in multiple ways. Not only is the figure in the doorway the right height, the right weight, the right build, wearing the same clothing as Lee when he was arrested, not only was Billy Lovelady the only alternative who has ever been proposed, 2 to 3 inches shorter, 15 to 20 pounds heavier, but he was captured in the same photograph, wearing a short-sleeved, vertically red and white, vertically striped shirt with his hands raised to protect him from the sun while he watched the motorcade just to Lee's left. And we have now done further studies and shown that if you do a GIF that puts Oswald into the outline of the head and face of the man in the doorway, it fits exactly. If you do the same with Lovelady, it's a mismatch. Where we've also shown that a shirt that was also attributed to Lovelady, a red and black checkered shirt, which he was not wearing, that it's not a match with Doorman, even though a leading expert on the assassination, Robert Grodin, was hired by the HSC as a special consultant and reported back to them precisely the opposite, claiming that the black and red checkered shirt was a closer match to Doorman's shirt than was Lee's shirt. Completely false, as Judith Berry Baker has proven doing a pixelation study. I mean, it's a truly fascinating case where Lee not only cannot have been the lone gunman, but because he was in the doorway at the time, he cannot have even been one of the shooters.
Right. Well, the one thing that I noticed right away in the, you know, as it's rolling in their intro is the picture of Lee with the rifle standing, you know, in front of his yard or whatever, which has been disproven so many times. And then they show
a
map.
Those are the so-called backyard photographs. Right. Lee was shown one of them and told Will Prince. the homicide detective who was interrogating him, that was his face pasted on someone else's body, and that he knew something about photography and with time would be able to prove it. Well, we have proven it multiple ways. Jim Mars and I co-authored an article entitled Framing the Patsy, the Case of Lee Harvey Oswald, where among our many points were that there are at least four of these photographs, but they've taken at different times and different poses, but the face is identical in every one, which is an optical impossibility, that there's an insert line between the chin and the lower lip, that the chin is not Oswald's, it's a block chin. Oswald had a rather pointed chin, that the fingertips holding the newspapers are cut off on the right hand, that the newspapers have known dimensions, which Jack White, a legendary photo and film analyst, used as an internal ruler and was able to establish that the figure posing in the photograph was only 5'6" if the newspapers were the right size, or, which seems even more likely, that when they created the fake photographs, they put them in a little too large because we knew Lee was about 5'10". So we have a mass of evidence about this, and then for a program to be coming on at this point in time with such flimsy, falsified, fabricated evidence is an embarrassment, in my opinion, Maria. But, of course, it's serving the function of disinformation, reinforcing the government's lies, because we have done so much to expose it of late. They feel they have to go back for another dose of false information to keep the public in a state of confusion.
Right. Well, it seems like the only show that's actually putting out some political truth, the only redo, is the new X-Files. I haven't seen last night's episode, but somebody who did see it said that they actually take on chemtrails in it. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be more to come. But, you know, when you really know, like you and I do, we can look at these shows with a whole different view than most people will. But I have to tell you, I was dying to talk to you after Sirhan Sirhan's parole hearing that happened last month. And once again, this guy is innocent, and they still won't parole him, even though he had that man that he did shoot testify on Sirhan's behalf. They're still leaving this guy rotting in jail for that bullshit official story.
Yeah, well, Sirhan unloaded his weapon, which was eight shots, all in front of Bobby, and did hit several people, but not Bobby Kennedy, who was shot four times from behind. Thomas Noguchi, who is a world-famous medical examiner in Los Angeles, did a very thorough autopsy. Bobby died from a shot that was fired from about an inch and a half behind his right ear. A security guard standing behind him, Thane Eugene Caesar, had a similar caliber weapon, which appears to have been substituted later on so they could get the actual murder weapon into evidence that would be a match for the bodies in the body. But Sirhan fired none of the shots that hit Bobby. He was a distraction. He'd been under hypnosis. In fact, a psychiatrist who worked for the CIA boasted during a radio program that he had hypnotized Sirhan for the agency.
And yet, that's another story that just got buried. You know, I know earlier you and I were talking that, you know, back in those days, at least we had media that told us the truth, but they really didn't. It's just today they seem to lie in our faces even more so.
They were bad enough about JFK, but since 9/11, the media have been under complete domination. The problem began back in the Reagan era when they abandoned the Fairness Doctrine and the 777 rule, which said one company could not own more than 7 newspapers, 7 radio stations, and 7 TV stations. Now you have a Clear Channel that owns in excess of 1,000 radio stations all by itself, and all the media are consolidated by 5 or 6 corporations that control over 90% of all the information the American people receive.
Well, and we know it's all propaganda. They bragged, the CIA bragged in the 70s that they almost controlled all the media. So, you know, they must have finished the job by now.
Carl Bernstein published an article in Rolling Stone entitled The CIA and the Media in 1977, in which he interviewed high officials who boasted that their greatest successes have been with Time Life, with the New York Times, and with CBS. And in that era, Maria, if you controlled those three outlets, you pretty much had a lock on the American news media.
Absolutely. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think about Donald Trump not only blaming 9/11 on George Bush, which I think was the grand finale to get rid of Jeb, no tears for Jeb leaving, but saying that he would reveal what really happened on 9/11 if we elect him? What do you think of that?
I think it's sensational, and several news reports are coming out now confirming that Trump is right about 9/11 and about the Middle East, where, of course, he's completely repudiating our invasion of Iraq, pointing out we spent $4 to $5 trillion. We got nothing for it. Better if that money had been spent on roads and bridges and schools here in the United States. I think Trump is our by far most promising candidate to get the heart of some of these matters and reveal the truth to the American people, which they've been deprived for so long.
Well, he also seems to be the only candidate against forced vaccines or vaccines in general. He's actually talked the truth about vaccines damaging our children.
I think Trump is absolutely sensational. And, of course, therefore, some have been concerned that they may want to take him out. I've seen other reports where some Republicans are now gravitating toward the idea that Trump will be their nominee. Frankly, if they were to get behind him, they could do very well in the next election. But if they oppose him, I think Trump will carry the day, but maybe not a lot of other Republican candidates, because they don't, if they aren't enthusiastic about Trump, you know that they are opposed to the truth being revealed to the American people.
Absolutely. Well, I have to tell you, there was no tears shed for Jeb Bush suspending his campaign.
It's fascinating. It shows that money doesn't necessarily guarantee electability. He spent a staggering amount of money and got absolutely nowhere, Maria. I think the American people have seen through it. And what can you say about a candidate who has to campaign by bringing out his mother, or who campaigns with the worst president in the history of the United States, his brother?
I know.
And Trump was so good in calling out Jeb when he said his brother kept us safe, by ignoring the fact that 9/11 took place on his brother's watch, and they had plenty of warnings, even if you accept the official account, that it had been conducted by, Al-Qaeda, which is ridiculous and untrue. It was brought to us by the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. But even if you take the official account, what Jeb was claiming is indefensible, and Trump called him on it very appropriately.
Well, you know, yesterday I had a news story talking about 9/11 and the Saudis. I had a news story that it's actually a Saudi company that has the job of maintaining Air Force One and several of the other planes that fly our dignitaries around. And I'm like, the Saudis, I said, taking care of Air Force One. I said, aren't they supposedly the ones who pulled off 9/11?
Well, and the Israelis ran security at the airports from which the 9/11 aircraft were alleged to have departed, and they have a messaging company that was warning Jews to stay away from Lower Manhattan. I even had a little old lady from Brooklyn call me to say their rabbi had advised a member of their synagogue to stay out of Lower Manhattan that day. I mean, Israeli complicity is overwhelming. For those who have any doubt about it, check out the website Israel Did 9/11, All the Proof in the World, or even better, a two-hour video program I did on the Real Deal episode number 103, 9/11, Who Was Responsible and Why, with Dennis Camino, who was the Navy's top electronics troubleshooter before he left the Navy to join Raytheon.
Well, it's all pretty damn interesting. We live in interesting times. Man, I long for the 50s and 60s. Jim, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, we have lots more to talk about, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
She's been called Paula Revere, the mother of the internet and even a legend. The mouth that roars all truth without any input from corporate, religious, or political affiliations. Bria's in it just like you are. Often imitated, but never duplicated. Commercial-free talk providing a real education in a world filled with lies, cover-ups, and propaganda. Subscribe now and encourage your friends to do the same. Feel good about supporting real media that supports you and all life on this planet. Pick a subscription of your choice and get started on the journey down the rabbit hole. If you are financially challenged or a senior on a limited income, please send an email to maria@maria.net and she will work something out for you. There's never been a more dangerous or exciting time to be alive. Education is a necessity now. Stay informed. Subscribe today at www.meria.net.
Okay, welcome back to Born in the 40s, We Remember. Maybe we should also call it We Don't Take Any Crap because we can smell bullshit a mile away. Jim, I mean, happy days. I mean, I got two good news stories. I've waited I don't know how many years for good news stories. One of them was, of course, Jeb stepping down. And the other one was Scalia dropping dead. As soon as I got that bulletin, I poured myself a big glass of wine and I started singing Glory, Glory, Hallelujah.
Well, you know, it's a very strange case, Maria, because he's going to this exclusive resort in a remote area of Texas. It has no medical facilities in the vicinity. He leaves behind his security. He is found dead, but there's a lengthy delay in the announcement. My wife, learning just those facts, said she thought they had to clean up the scene, but remove the little girls or the little boys. And it just may be that she put her finger right on it. By Texas law, there is required to be an inquest, but none was conducted. He was pronounced having died of natural causes over the phone with no examination of the body, which was then transported to El Paso to a funeral home 3.5 hours away, when there was one far closer in the vicinity. But in El Paso, they dump all the internal fluids and so forth into the sewer system, whereas in the more the closer vicinity, they might very well have retained them because they have a concern about water, the purity of water and so forth. But the whole thing is suspicious from start, where the guy, the billionaire, John Poindexter, who runs this place, had invited Scalia as a gift. There were some 32 other visitors there, residents at the resort at the time, none of whom have been identified. Scalia was invited to come with a guest who has also never been identified. And this Poindexter received a medal from Obama recently in relation to the Vietnam War over 40 years earlier, Maria. What's with that?
Well, there's a lot of good questions about it, but, you know, I have to tell you, I think I told you off air, even if it was a political assassination, it's the only one I agree with. You know, having lived through the 60s, you know what I mean.
Well, the motives, yeah, there are multiple potential motives involved here, one of which, of course, is that Obama has been, you know, become frantic about trying to undermine the Second Amendment. Scalia was an absolutist about the Second Amendment, an issue on which I agree with him completely. I believe you do too.
Right.
He was also opposed to a whole lot of climate change legislation that Obama's been promoting that would have created new billion-dollar industries. There's another motive. There appear to have been a host of others. Well, I've got a fellow, Ray Starman, who worked in Army Intelligence for 8 years, who believes that there are real issues here with no autopsy performed, why he was so quickly embalmed. And indeed, John Rappaport has published about it, where William Ritchie, the former head of criminal investigation for the District of Columbia Police, observed, as a former homicide commander, I'm stunned that no autopsy was ordered for Justice Scalia. You have a Supreme Court justice who died not in attendance of a physician. You have a non-homicide trained U.S. Marshal tell the justice of the peace that no foul play was observed. You have a justice of the peace pronouncing death while not being on the scene and without any medical training, opining that the justice died of a heart attack. What medical proof exists of a myocardial infarction? Why not a cerebral hemorrhage? How can the marshal say, without a thorough postmortem, that he was not injected with an illegal substance that would simulate a heart attack?
Right. Well, you know, the first thing I thought of was how fast they got rid of that body and shipped it off. It took me immediately right back to Texas breaking all kinds of laws by shipping Kennedy's body out of there.
Yeah, that was actually they forcibly stole JFK's body, whereby Texas law, an inquest, an autopsy had to be conducted in Dallas. They had a celebrated medical examiner, Earl Rose. I've seen his autopsy on Officer J.D. Tippett. It was thorough, meticulous, you know, where each of the wounds had occurred. Tippett had been shot four times, three in the torso, once in the head, interestingly, in the right temple, after he was already lying on the ground. They found the slugs on the shell casings on the scene, by the way, Maria, which had been ejected from automatics. They were of two different manufacturers. Lee, of course, had a revolver, which does not automatically eject shell casings. Later, a substitution would be made, and not even the initials on the shell casings put there by the first officer on the scene would remain with the replacement, the cartridges from a revolver, which are completely different.
Right, but you know what? The same questions, the same laws that were broken when Kennedy died in Texas, no one seemed to want to question it. And now everybody did the same exact thing, it seemed to me, with Scalia. And not that I really give a crap about Scalia, but it is unusual. And maybe this is a common practice in Texas. Maybe this place, this ranch, was another bohemian grove for the elite to play and do all kinds of wicked things that they all tend to do, or as Roger Stone calls it, elite deviance.
Well, the report I have, Maria, is extraordinarily disturbing by a fellow named David Schurter, S-H-U-R-T-E-R, who has published an article, actually a book, entitled Down the Rabbit Hole, which you can find on Amazon.com. There are several with that title, but if you add the word satanic, down the rabbit hole, comma, satanic, it'll turn up. Whereas published a blog about this. Let me read part of it because it is so stunning. The truth about Scalia's murder, and yes, he was murdered. As everyone knows, there are many questions surrounding Scalia's death, but none of them, in my opinion, are the right ones. I do believe that Scalia was murdered, but wasn't an assassination like many people are assuming. Scalia was brought down by his own behavior, and he is definitely not going to be the only one. Why did Scalia leave his detail of protection, fly to Texas, and go to a place that was an hour from the rest of civilization? No police, no media, and the only people who stay at the $600 a night dump are rich people? I've seen pictures of the rooms, and they don't look any better than your local Super 8 motel rooms. So why are the rich flocking to this place? And why this rush to not have an autopsy and declare that he died of natural causes? Most everyone has seen a problem with this. They don't understand what is happening. Scalia liked to little boys. I know this from personal experience. He was one of my primary abusers as a child. This is now David Schurter writing, and was one of the heads of the cult that abused me. He was a vile man who was such an extreme sadist that I find it hard to give words to his voracious appetite. I hated this man in ways that I can't begin to explain, and he rivaled a fellow named Michael Aquino, whom he mentions later, as in my abuse as a child. That is why heaven reached out and claimed him, and I assure you he isn't going to be the only one. Doing what Scalia did is exactly what other pedophiles do when they drive two or three states over to have sex with children. Who goes that far, an hour away from everyone, just to stay one night? He wasn't having meetings at this dump. In fact, the official story is he had dinner with people and then retired early. Why? Because he went there to a 13-year-old boy who in turn slit his throat. That is why there's been so much secrecy surrounding the situation, why the family was so eager to not have an autopsy done. They don't want anyone to know the details surrounding this pedophile's last moments, and they are doing everything they can to keep anyone from finding out, and for good reason. He goes on, it's utterly stunning, Maria, and frankly, the way he writes about this, that he's previously published a book, in my opinion, gives him great credibility. I would add, however, that I believe it may be that this 13-year-old boy became the instrument for the murder of Scalia, but within a political framework that means it actually was an assassination. But with this subject of pedophilia of gross abuse by Scalia took revenge and actually functioned to serve the interests of the Obama administration.
Well, that's why I always say never trust men who wear dresses, that's for sure. But, you know, it reminded me of Kathy O'Brien's story, Transformation of America, where she names everybody from the Bushes to the Clintons as being her abusers of her and her daughter and her handlers. And then supposedly, you know, she met this guy who, you know, broke her free. But my sense was he was still handling her. But there are a lot of people that don't want to hear about pedophilia. But let's not forget, Scalia was Opus Dei. And the Catholic Church is rampant with pedophiles.
Well, my wife and I recently watched the film Spotlight, which is about the role of the Boston Globe in exposing, you know, the Catholic Church cover-up of pedophilia being covered by a staggering number of priests. There were like 95 involved here. It's a brilliant film. I recommend everyone to watch it. And it's just astonishing to me how far the Boston Globe has fallen, because it was well aware that the Boston Marathon was a complete drill. It was presented as a hoax. The Boston Globe itself was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set up during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities. A second tweet that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, and 1 minute later, a bomb is set off in front of the Boston Public Library. It's unbelievable, Maria, how far that once great newspaper has fallen.
Well, you know, they're all sellouts and bought outs. And when you do have a decent reporter, you know, you think about Gary Webb on a small little paper like the Mercury. And look what happened to him. Do you know what I mean? I mean, we live in dangerous times. Look what happened to Dave McGowan. You know, I watch people falling all the time. Because this isn't a, you know, this isn't a country where truth reigns. You know, I read the article you sent me by Wayne Madsen, who is a reporter I actually respect. It's a great article. No Country for Old Supreme Court Justices, obviously, you know, making a little take off the movie No Country for Old Men. But Wayne also posits some very good, you know, questions. You know, why did Scalia get a gift? You know, why is it that these judges can get so much free stuff? And how do they remain, you know, where, you know, you think they're voting for the people, which, of course, you and I know they're not.
Well, I've read Kathy O'Brien's book, Trance, T-R-A-N-C-E, Transformation of America, in which he talks about how she and her daughter were trained to serve as sex slaves, and how none other than George Herbert Walker Bush, whom David Schurter also identifies as an abuser of little boys, was the first to initiate her daughter when she was about 5 years old into sex, and how everyone was appalled at Dick Cheney because he was so well endowed that they feared having to have sexual encounters with him. It's a very disturbing book. And I also watched Kathy O'Brien speak at a conference in Philadelphia, where I was also a participant, Open Your Mind conference a couple years ago. And I find her writing highly persuasive. And when you complement it with this blog by David Schurter, who also mentions that others are going to be retaliated against, including Warren Buffett and George Herbert Walker Bush, I find the whole thing profoundly disturbing, and I'm inclined to believe it all. I agree about Wayne Madsen. He's maybe our only, or one of the very few remaining bona fide investigative journalists in the United States today.
Absolutely. So, you know, everybody's really got to look at this. You can look at this from a million different ways, you know, but, you know, I have to tell you that I find it a tad on the scary side that the first person Obama's thinking of replacing him with is Loretta Lynch.
That's ridiculous. She's a nobody. She's an absolute nobody. You know, that he would even consider such a nomination is a clear indictment of his qualifications as president of the United States. No one has respect for Loretta Lynch. It's a ridiculous idea, and I would stand with the Republicans in repudiating any such nomination.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you just gave a lecture in Portland. What was that about? Because I think you just got home last night, right?
That's right. That's right. I did, actually. I was invited out by the 9/11 Truth Group in Seattle, and as has happened in the past, Portland piggybacked. So they, you know, they split covering my transportation out. They wanted me to cover five different false flags. So I actually gave a presentation, which to my surprise, the Portland event from yesterday is already up on YouTube under the title False Flags Are Real. I was giving a summary dissection of these cases, just enough evidence to prove that what we had been told was false and that these events had been fabricated. I discussed 9/11, particularly the faking of the crash sites, which established that none of those planes actually crashed on 9/11, which means that none of the passengers aboard them died in crashes that did not occur, which means there were no suicide hijackers aboard to cause the crashes to take place when they did not, where David Ray Griffin, even in his magisterial, the 9/11 Commission Report Omissions and Distortions, makes that his first point. Mm-hmm. And a half a dozen or more of these guys turned up alive and well the following day, where many had interviews with the media in the UK. The second was, of course, Sandy Hook, where I explained, you know, some of the core issues about the fabrication of that event, including that we even have the FEMA manual for a two-day exercise with a rehearsal on the 13th going live on the 14th, and where there was so much confusion on the part of participants that some even put up donation sites the day before the event, and where Adam Lanza's date of death was recorded in the Social Security Death Index as having happened on the 13th, which makes his feat in shooting 20 children and 6 adults the following day all the more remarkable. When I turned to the Boston Marathon bombing, I explained that we had the police out on bullhorns where you can hear them calling out, "This is a drill. This is a drill." I've already mentioned the Boston Globe tweets. Then we have footage beneath the smoke where, as a former artillery officer, I observed these were minimal explosives. They weren't powerful enough to kill anyone. And looking through the smoke, you can see there is no blood. So you have people there with missing body parts, but there is no blood. Where Lorraine Day, who was head of trauma surgery for San Francisco Hospital, General Hospital, for 25 years, observes this is a physiological impossibility. Nathan Foulkes, a Hollywood producer, director, who identified one of the key players, Carlos Arredondo in the cowboy hat, as an actor he'd cast in one of his own films, was the first to mention to me that he thought the smoke actually had come from a smoke machine. And in the chapter about how it was done, we not only have photographs of the canisters from which the blood came and was put down, Hollywood blood, but we actually captured the smoke machine, Maria. So they were using crisis actors. With regard to San Bernardino, I point out that we've even discovered the Craigslist ad for extras at San Bernardino with good pay, transportation, food, call on the first, perform on the second, some speaking roles. It's all completely outrageous. And then for an international twist, talked about the Paris shooting and how they were running drills parallel, similar in London in 7/7, where the young men who were accused there were not even able to get to the subway stops in time. They apparently had been recruited to be participants in a drill because the train from Luton had been canceled. Well, we have photographs of, you know, purported victims in Paris with their T-shirt inside out. We have photographs of the club afterward where you can see the band have the presence of mind to put together their set, put their drum set together in a way and so forth, and that the blood on the ground has been mopped up, and where there was a meeting between the head of our CIA and the head of French intelligence just days before. All of these are completely outrageous, Maria. I encourage anyone with a serious interest to check it out. The Seattle presentation should be up in a few days, where there will be, you know, the slides will also be there, but endure for a longer time than in the case of Portland.
Right. Well, I already posted a link to that YouTube on social media this morning before our show, but I'll be absolutely including it here on site and sending it to my listeners as well. We only have a minute or two left, Jim. What was the audience reaction to your speech?
It was actually terrific. I had a good audience in Seattle, but an even better in Portland. because no doubt because I'd just done the presentation the day before, I was even more efficient and completed it in about an hour and 15, where I'd surmise since I have 90 slides, it would take an hour and a half. But the discussion in Portland went on, so the total event was 3 hours. We had a longer discussion than we had the presentation. Excellent questions. I'm hoping no one at either site was disputing any of my presentation or arguments about how we know these were fabricated events, false flag events intended to demonize some source that was not responsible for them having taken place at all. It was a wonderful discussion, and I'm hoping they're going to post that as well.
Well, that's great. That's absolutely great. Well, Jim, thank you so much. And I'm sure you're pretty talked out. So why don't you give yourself a little break? Have yourself a cup of warm tea.
Thanks, Maria. Always a pleasure.
Same here. We'll talk soon, Jim. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Jim Fetzer. Check him out. Check out his work. I have a link here to the YouTube. Make sure you check it out. Send it everywhere. It's a great presentation. Crystal clear. Can't miss it. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. Please encourage other people to support the show, either with a donation or a subscription. I'd rather they subscribe because they need to hear the shows every day. I mean, this is where truth lives. This is where real thinking people can say, okay, I guess I'm not crazy. Anyway, thanks again, and I'll see you guys on Thursday when I'm back with news of Planet of the Apes.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.